So, we take up chapter 6 tonight, The Delight of the Divine, published originally on the 15th September 1918. It's a skosh over 5 pages long. Let's do the entire chapter tonight. Chapter 6, The Delight of the Divine. This, then, is the way of devotion, and this its justification to the highest and the widest, the most integral knowledge. And we can now perceive what form and place it will take in an integral yoga. Yoga is, in essence, the union of the soul with the immortal being and consciousness and delight of the divine, affected through the human nature with the result of development into the divine nature of being, whatever that may be, so far as we can conceive it in mind and realize it in spiritual activity. What a declaration. That is a summary statement that we should underline, if you dare, in your book, or if you're penciling along the corners of your papers in the margins, put a dot there. The individual soul moves into dynamic communion with this being who is conscious, and who is full of delight. Again, we're back to Satchit-Ananda, a concept which we speak about as if it was available in the earliest streams of the Vedanta, but actually was developed a good bit later. But once developed, everyone loved it. Those who believed in the impersonal divine, that Advaitins, but those who originated it were the theistic Advaitins, who believed that there was one being, but a person, a conscious being whose nature was delight, be it the Divine Mother, the Mahashakti, be it a form taking masculine shape, like Vishnu or Shiva. Whatever it is, look at how thoroughgoing this definition of yoga is. It penetrates all the way to the core of humanity. Whatever possibility we see now is not the final possibility. Whatever the course of the yoga, it can always go farther. Whatever that may be, so far as we can conceive it, so far as we can realize it. No realization stands forever. It should be displaced in the movement of time. We should have greater realizations, but they should all be pinned upon what is an utter truth. And the utter truth is Satchit-Ananda. He continues, whatever we see of this divine and fix our concentrated effort upon it, that we can become or grow into some kind of unity with it, or at the lowest into tune and harmony with it. So this would bring everyone in the whole Vedantic stream, the Advaitin, the Vishishtadvaitin, the Dvaitin, those who believe in an unvanquished, immaculate being beyond time and space, those who believe in a conscious God, a person who brings the soul into communion with him, like a lost child coming back to a parent, or the Dvaitin, which admits a relationship between the human soul and the divine, but imparts upon us an unbridgeable threshold. We can't go beyond, we can't really enter into the being of that perfect nature. The old Upanishad put it trenchantly in its highest terms. Whoever envisages it as the existence becomes that existence, and whoever envisages it as the non-existence becomes that non-existence. Well, this is the thousands of years old debate between the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the Chandogya Upanishad, and the Taittiriya Upanishad. We will not referee that debate, but I refer you to it. The sentence continues, so too it is with all else that we see of the divine. That, we may say, is at once the essential and the pragmatic truth of the Godhead. It is something beyond us, which is indeed already within us, but which we as yet are not, or are only initially in our human existence. But whatever of it we see, we can create or reveal in our conscious nature and being, and can grow into it. And so to create or reveal in ourselves individually the Godhead and grow into its universality and transcendence is our spiritual destiny. Again, a principal theme in the life divine. The coexistence of these three terms of being, the transcendence beyond all definition, all determination, the universal, this transcendence manifests, brings out from its own being, not an appearance, not an illusion, but some aspect of its own being which was not seen before. And finally, the individual, who in a way connects the two. It is the individual growing in yoga that can bond the two together. Or if this seemed too high for the weakness of our nature, then at least to approach, reflect, and be in secure communion with it is a near and possible consummation. So yoga is not, to Sri Aurobindo, a turning away from the world. It's not the sublation of the individual into the seas of conscious being outside the cosmos. It is the fulfillment of that transcendent being taking universal form here and now. The aim of this synthetic or integral yoga, which we are considering, is union with the being, consciousness, and delight of the divine through every part of our nature separately or simultaneously, but all in the long end harmonized and unified so that the whole may be transformed into a divine nature of being. So that means nothing is let out of this grand formula. Body, life, mind, all should participate in the reunification of the being, the basis of the divine consciousness. And who delights from that? Everyone, everything. Nothing less than this can satisfy the integral seer. Because what he sees must be that which he strives to possess spiritually, and so far as may be, become. So there's dynamism there. It is not an abstraction. The seer does not recognize, but is unmoved by it, but moves with it. Not with the knower in him alone, nor with the will alone, nor with the heart alone, but with all these equally, and also with the whole mental and vital being in him, he aspires to the Godhead and labors to convert their nature into its divine equivalence. Because remember, everything here came from there. So our body hailed from Sat. Our life energy hailed from Chit Tapas. Our mind came from the supramental consciousness. Pinned here in a cloak of obscurity which we can remove through evolution. And who is it that evolves? That drop of bliss, that spark of the divine fire, the psyche. And since God meets us in many ways of his being and in all, tempts us to him even while he seems to elude us, and to see divine possibility and overcome its play of obstacles constitutes the whole mystery and greatness of human existence. Therefore, in each of these ways at its highest, or in the union of all, if we can find the key of their oneness, we shall aspire to track out and find and possess him. So that possession, again, is a signature of victory, finding the divine in a hidden form. It is a siddhi, a fulfillment. Since he withdraws into impersonality, Advaita, we follow after his impersonal being and delight. But since he meets us also in our personality and through personal relations of the divine with the human, that too we shall not deny ourselves. We shall admit both the play of the love and the delight and its ineffable union. And that's Vishishtadvaita and even Dvaita. By knowledge, we seek unity with the divine in his conscious being. By works, we seek also unity with the divine in his conscious being, not statically but dynamically through conscious union with the divine will. But by love, we seek unity with him in all the delight of his being. Pardon me for a moment. I'd like to read that again. By knowledge, we seek unity with the divine in his conscious being. By works, we seek also unity with the divine in his conscious being, not statically, but dynamically, through conscious union with the divine will. But by love, we seek unity with him in all the delight of his being. For that reason, the way of love, however narrow it may seem in some of its first movements, is in the end more imperatively all-embracing than any other motive of yoga. You'll remember Sri Ramakrishna launched his disciples into the practice of bhakti yoga first. Yes, he had achieved union through every means and method shown to him, but he found that it was the ignited heart that could get to the truth the fastest, that could find the union the quickest, and the soul finding that union is fulfilled. Later may come knowledge, later may come works, but somehow you have to find that in you which is drawn and compel it to go forward. The way of knowledge tends easily towards the impersonal and the absolute, may very soon become exclusive. It is true that it need not do so, since the conscious being of the divine is universal and individual, as well as transcendent and absolute. Here too, there may be and should be a tendency to integral realization of unity, and we can arrive by it at a spiritual oneness with God in man and God in the universe, not less complete than any transcendent union. But still, this is not quite imperative. For we may plead that there is a higher and a lower knowledge, a higher self-awareness and a lower self-awareness, and that here the apex of knowledge is to be pursued to the exclusion of the mass of knowledge, the way of exclusion preferred to the integral way. Or we may discover a theory of illusion to justify our rejection of all connection with our fellow men and with the cosmic action. The way of works leads us to the transcendent, whose power of being manifests itself as a will in the world, one in us and all, by identity with which we come, owing to the conditions of that identity, into union with him as the one self in all, and as the universal self and Lord in the cosmos. And this might seem to impose a certain comprehensiveness in our realization of the unity, but still, this too is not quite imperative. For this motive also may lean towards an entire impersonality, and even if it leads to a continued participation in the activities of the universal Godhead, may be entirely detached and passive in its principle. It is only when delight intervenes that the motive of integral union becomes quite imperative. So these ways of approach, whether it's through knowledge and the seeming erasure of a connected and real person in the all-swallowing infinity, or the vastness that we meet when we move in concordance with the divine will, doing universal works, but without reference to the person here, there only. We get a fuller fulfillment when delight becomes the signature of the work. This again is where the psychic, with love at its core, links the universe and the transcendent, and why it is indispensable in the integral yoga. That third term of being would fall in the practice of yoga writ large if we didn't kindle into wakefulness the psychic being and engage it in the pursuit of knowledge and engage it in the pursuit of perfect work. This delight, which is so entirely imperative, is the delight in the divine for his own sake and for nothing else, for no cause or gain whatever beyond itself. It does not seek God for anything that he can give us or for any particular quality in him, but simply and purely because he is our self and our whole being and our all. It embraces the delight of the transcendence, not for the sake of transcendence, but because he is the transcendent. The delight of the universal, not for the sake of universality, but because he is the universal. The delight of the individual, not for the sake of individual satisfaction, but because he is the individual. It goes behind all distinctions and appearances and makes no calculations of more or less in his being. but embraces him wherever he is and therefore everywhere, embraces him utterly in the seeming less as in the seeming more, in the apparent limitation as in the revelation of the illimitable. It has the intuition and the experience of his oneness and completeness everywhere. To seek after him for the sake of his absolute being alone is really to drive at our own individual gain, the gain of absolute peace, the desire for moksha. To possess him absolutely indeed is necessarily the aim of this delight in his being, but this comes when we possess him utterly and are utterly possessed by him, and need be limited to no particular status or condition. To seek after him in some heaven of bliss is to seek him not for himself, but for the bliss of heaven. When we have all the true delight of his being, then heaven is within ourselves, and wherever he is and we are, there we have the joy of his kingdom. Mundaka Upanishad. So too, to seek him only in ourselves and for ourselves is to limit both ourselves and our joy in him. The integral delight embraces him not only within our own individual being, but equally in all men and in all beings. And because in him we are one with all, it seeks him not only for ourselves, but for all our fellows. A perfect and complete delight in the divine. Perfect because pure and self-existent. Complete because all-embracing as well as all-absorbing is the meaning of the way of bhakti for the seeker of the integral yoga. So the motive may be this or that, but bhakti from the root bhaj means to connect to have a share, a portion of. So as a lost and straying soul wandering through the universe, if we find our way back into the embrace of the divine, that reunification gives us every possible good. And our experience of the world is changed not only in the experience of unity, but in what moves through us back into the world. It becomes a dynamism itself. So change your consciousness, the atmosphere around you, the environment, social context shifts also. Based on the pure and self-existent. So we're back to sat. All embracing, all absorbing. That's an active movement. That's chit tapas. And the delight is the cause of all. Once it is active in us, all other ways of yoga convert themselves, as it were, to its law and find by it their own richest significance. This integral devotion of our being to God does not turn away from knowledge. The bhakta of this path is the God-lover who is also the God-knower. Because by knowledge of his being comes the whole delight of his being. But it is in delight that knowledge fulfills itself. The knowledge of the transcendent in the delight of the transcendent. The knowledge of the universal in the delight of the universal Godhead. The knowledge of the individual manifestation in the delight of God in the individual. The knowledge of the impersonal in the pure delight of his impersonal being. The knowledge of the personal in the full delight of his personality. The knowledge of his qualities and their play in the delight of the manifestation. The knowledge of the qualityless in the delight of his colorless existence and non-manifestation. And you'll remember that Sri Aurobindo housed all of these realizations in his being. His being had no wall, it's true. He was wider than the universe. He was as tall as the transcendent and as profound as the abyss that we call the inconscient. He plunged, he climbed, he embraced all of it. And he said he couldn't have done the sadhana, especially during the teens of the century, when he was writing these pages, if Ananda had not been present to sustain him through all the challenges, the turmoil, the denials, the reversals of nature, the response of the inconscient to his insistence that light come. It was not welcome. He brought it anyway because he was a light bringer. So, whether impersonal or deeply personal, Sri Aurobindo fulfilled this idea that Sri Ramakrishna had in his interior intuitive experience. But Sri Aurobindo poured it out in a body. He dynamized it in life. He never withdrew from life. This is a falsity that Sri Aurobindo went up to his room and had nothing to do with the world after retiring in 1926. Bah. So too, this God lover will be the divine worker. Not for the sake of works or for a self-regarding pleasure and action, but because in this way, God expends the power of his being. And in his powers and their signs, we find him. Because the divine will and works is the outflowing of the Godhead in the delight of its power, of divine being in the delight of divine force. He will feel perfect joy in the works and acts of the beloved, because in them too he finds the beloved. He will himself do all the works, because through those works too, the Lord of his being expresses his divine joy in him. When he works, he feels that he is expressing in act and power his oneness with that which he loves and adores. He feels the rapture of the will which he obeys and with which all the force of his being is blissfully identified. So too, again, this God lover will seek after perfection, because perfection is the nature of the divine, and the more he grows into perfection, the more he feels the beloved manifest in his natural being. Yes, he is adumbrating the coming chapters of the Yoga of Self-Perfection, as he will be eventually titled. But he knows those are before him as he writes this sentence. Or he will simply grow in perfection like the blossoming of a flower, because the divine is in him and the joy of the divine. And as that joy expands in him, soul and mind and life too expand naturally into their Godhead. At the same time, because he feels the divine in all, perfect within every limiting appearance, he will not have the sorrow of his imperfection. This is wonderful, because this is the secret for continuing in life, surrounded by imperfection, challenged by ignorant, but there's a light within that is growing. There's a throb of delight, a throb of bliss, pulsating one step at a time. Keep moving forward. Keep advancing. nor will the seeking of the divine through life and the meeting of him in all the activities of his being and of the universal being be absent from the scope of his worship. All nature and all life will be to him at once a revelation and a fine trysting place. Yes, this is a grand romance. We're looking for God everywhere, and everything that we meet disguises it brilliantly when we can penetrate that disguise. And every time we do, God laughs at our victory. He enjoys that. Intellectual and aesthetic and dynamic activities, science and philosophy and life, thought and art and action will assume for him a diviner sanction and a greater meaning. He will seek them because of his clear sight of the divine through them and because of the delight of the divine in them. He will not be indeed attached to their appearances, for attachment is an obstacle to the ananda. But because he possesses that pure, powerful, and perfect ananda, which obtains everything but is dependent on nothing, and because he finds in them the ways and acts and signs, the becomings and the symbols and images of the beloved, he draws from them a rapture which the normal mind that pursues them for themselves cannot attain or even dream. All this and more becomes part of the integral way and its consummation. Ah. The Taittiriya Upanishad. All things come from delight. All things are sustained in delight. And all things in their going hence pass into delight. The general power of delight is love. And the special mold which the joy of love takes is the vision of beauty. So this ancient Indian formula, Satyam Shivam Sundaram. What is true? What is auspicious? What is beautiful? The God lover is the universal lover, and he embraces the all blissful and all beautiful. When universal love has seized on his heart, it is the decisive sign that the divine has taken possession of him. And when he has the vision of the all-beautiful everywhere and can feel at all times the bliss of his embrace, that is the decisive sign that he has taken possession of the divine. Siddhi, Siddha. Union is the consummation of love. But it is this mutual possession that gives it at once the acme and the largest reach of its intensity. It is the foundation of oneness in ecstasy. Oneness, recovery, lost connectivity. The Hound of Heaven, Sir Francis Thompson's poem, where the human soul runs from the divine and the divine pursues. Every time you take a step forward, says the divine to us, I take two steps forward to you. But then you join the chase and you turn around, you begin to pursue the divine. He says, aha, can you then find me? What if I hide here? Can you find me now? Oh, don't despair. I'm still here. Listen. Listen with the heart. Listen with the soul. A wonderful chapter. Thank you for tolerating me. Let's go to book 3, the Book of the Divine Mother, and turn to page 312 and have a look in Canto 2 at the Adoration of the Divine Mother. Even while he stood on being's naked edge and all the passion and seeking of his soul faced their extinction in some featureless vast, the presence he yearned for suddenly drew close. Across the silence of the ultimate calm, out of a marvelous transcendence core, a body of wonder and translucency, as if a sweet mystic summary of herself, escaping into the original bliss, had come enlarged out of eternity. Someone came, infinite and absolute, a being of wisdom, power, and delight. Even as a mother draws her child to her arms, took to her breast nature and world and soul. Abolishing the signless emptiness, breaking the vacancy and voiceless hush, piercing the limitless unknowable, into the liberty of the motionless depths, a beautiful and felicitous luster stole. The power, the light, the bliss no word can speak, imaged itself in a surprising beam, and built a golden passage to his heart, touching through him all longing sentient things. A moment's sweetness of the all-beautiful canceled the vanity of the cosmic whirl. A nature throbbing with a heart divine was felt in the unconscious universe. It made the breath a happy mystery, a love that bore the cross of pain with joy. You demonized the sorrow of the world, made happy the weight of long unending time, the secret caught of God's felicity. Affirming in life a hidden ecstasy, it held the spirit to its miraculous course. Carrying immortal values to the hours, it justified the labor of the suns, for one was there supreme behind the god. A mother might brooded upon the world. A consciousness revealed its marvelous front, transcending all that is, denying none. Imperishable above our fallen heads, he felt a rapturous and unstumbling force. The undying truth appeared, the enduring power of all that here is made and then destroyed, the mother of all godheads and all strengths, who, mediatrix, binds earth to the supreme. The enigma seized that rules our nature's night, the covering nescience was unmasked and slain. Its mind of error was stripped off from things, and the dull moods of its perverting will. Illumined by her all-seeing identity, knowledge and ignorance could strive no more. No longer could the Titan opposites, antagonist poles of the world's artifice, imposed the illusion of their twofold screen, throwing their figures between us and her. The wisdom was near, disguised by its own works, of which the darkened universe is the robe. No more existence seemed an aimless fall. Extinction was no more the soul release. The hidden word was found, the long-sought clue. Revealed was the meaning of our spirit's birth, condemned to an imperfect body and mind in the inconscience of material things and the indignity of mortal life. A heart was felt in the spaces wide and bare. A burning love from white spiritual founts annulled the sorrow of the ignorant depths. Suffering was lost in her immortal smile. A life from beyond grew conqueror here of death. To err no more was natural to mind. Wrong could not come where all was light and love. The formless and the formed were joined in her. Immensity was exceeded by a look. A face revealed the crowded infinite. Incarnating inexpressibly in her limbs, the boundless joy the blind world forces seek, her body of beauty mooned the seas of bliss. At the head she stands, of birth and toil and fate. In their slow round, the cycles turn to her call. Alone, her hands can change time's dragon base. Hers is the mystery the night conceals. The spirit's alchemist energy is hers. She is the golden bridge. The wonderful fire. Do finish reading the rest. I leave it to you to complete. Purnam madaha purnam idam. Namaste, Jai Ma. Love you. Be well.